How many times have our patients returned to our office and are just stuck in the cycle of chronic inflammation? We throw everything we have at them, nothing changes, and even our dentists are frustrated. Rather than throwing our hands up and shrugging, we need to be turning to PerioTrace by PerioProtect. I have seen the evidence firsthand and have helped so many hygienists find this resource because it really works, which is why there are so many products on the market now trying to imitate them. The results are speaking for themselves, but rather than going with an unproven product, stick with the only periodontal medicine delivery system cleared by the FDA. And not only that, but their support team is seriously among the best I've ever encountered, from the education to implementation to support when there's the inevitable bumps on the road. They are there for you. If you want to get in contact with them to learn more about how you can treat your patients better, head over to perioprotect.com/RDH. And on that site, at the bottom is a contact form that you can fill out or simply email them directly to ask for help. This is one thing I truly believe should be in every dental practice. perioprotect.com/RDH to stop the cycle of chronic inflammation.
Get ready for your unofficial dental hygiene podcast. These are the tales of two hygienists, one East Coast RDH and one West Coast Guygenist. Listen as they tackle the profession of dental hygiene with humor and enthusiasm. Now, please join Michelle Strange and Andrew Johnston as they tell you a tale of two hygienists. Listeners, episode 61 of A Tale of Two Hygienists with Michelle. One day, Andrew, one day you will get
and
this.
And Andrew, hooray.
And I'm back. You had a co-host last year, two co-hosts. It was like takeover of A Tale of Two Hygienists.
It was like an upgrade. It was awesome.
Oh, really? It was an upgrade.
Yeah, it was.
Okay.
Yeah, I got lots of comments then about how great it was.
Because they're so great or because you
Not because of me, but because, yes, they were so great and so funny, and people liked them, and
yeah,
it was fantastic. So
nicely done. Mm-hmm. Glad they could come and fill in for me while I was gone.
Mm-hmm. How was Sweden?
Mm-hmm. Beautiful, even though it was cold and foggy, it was still pretty. It was great. A lot of travel, though. A lot of unpacking, repacking. I stayed in like three or four hotels, so.
Ugh.
And Delta broke my luggage. I brought brand new luggage. And those bastards. Oh, jeez. But anyway. So anyway. I got back and then I flew to, I was home for 2 days and just got back from New York. I flew there and a blizzard happened. Did you catch
that? That's so funny. I did. Yes, that's so funny. It's supposed to be biggest storm of the winter, right?
And if that's the case, it really wasn't that bad. And everybody was saying that it really wasn't that bad. And it stopped snowing by like 1 p.m. or something. Like it wasn't terrible. But it was so funny because I have this really warm, amazing winter coat for like heavy duty cold. Took that to Sweden. Took all my layers and stuff. Ended up like not even needing half of it because it was warmer in Sweden than it was in New York. When I arrived in New York, it was 60 degrees. And when I checked the weather, I didn't check it the morning before. I checked it like the 24 hours before I left because I was packing. And it was like 40s or something like that. And then when I get to the airport, everybody's like, "Do you know there's going to be a snowstorm tomorrow?" I was like, "Come again, what?" Wait, what? So I was not prepared for the snowstorm. I had to go buy snow boots because I was literally putting my life in my own hands with every step that I was taking with my cute little wedged boots. It was so funny. But I was being such a southerner because it's so funny because here I have so many friends that are from the north, from New York, Boston, Long Island, and a hurricane comes. And everybody freaks the hell out. And I'm like, God, come on, guys. It's going to be some rain. It's going to be some wind. I mean, they're like clearing the shelves of milk and bread and water, you know. And then I get up there And I roll them all the time. I'm like, calm down. Like, it's not going to be that bad. Like, I might leave it to category 4, maybe. But other than that, we're staying. We're fine. This happened in New York, and I was texting my roommate who is, you know, grew up in on Long Island, was stayed in Queens hurt like for years and years. I was like, will there be anything open? I have no food at this Airbnb. Where will I find stuff? Like, I don't have a coat. I mean, what will be open? What will I do? How will I get anywhere? And she's like, this is not Charleston. Nothing shuts down in New York. Like, just go get you some snow boots at Macy's and call it a day. I was like, but are you sure? What am I going to eat? She's like, nothing shuts down. Go to a deli on the corner and shut up. I was freaking out. I really was. So I was being the equivalent of myself. Yeah. Yeah. But it was a good time. I went to a dental, how to sell to dentist course that Tony Stefano does in New York. It's like a really small, intimate setting, and I learned so much. So that was fantastic. We're actually going to have him on the podcast.
Looking forward to that. Sounding pretty good.
Yep. Yeah, pretty great. And now I'm back.
Wow.
For 2 days.
Whirlwind. And then what?
And then I go to New Orleans for the Implant Congress meeting and ADIA, which is Dental Implant Auxiliary course. I spoke at it a year ago. Mm. And I think Susan Wingrove's going to be on the podium, and then Edie Gibson. So I get to hang out with them, which I'm excited about.
Tell Edie to friend request me on Facebook, if you would.
Or accept it, or friend request you?
No. I think she's blocked or something. I can't do it.
Oh, interesting. Yeah. All right.
I've been trying to be friends with her for a while, and she doesn't want to be my friend, I guess. So, whatever.
I will tell her. I am sure that is not the case, Andrew. Don't get your feelings hurt.
So, let's see. What's gone on with me since all that? Nothing. Not a thing. I've been working.
Work.
And I had 2 days off, like completely zero, didn't do anything. I mean, I had some you know, other stuff, but not like going into the office and working. And it was very nice.
Good for you.
And, oh, do you remember what I texted you this morning about I had a dream?
Oh, yeah. You had some kind of weird dream?
Oh, my gosh. Let me tell you all about it. So last night, God. We had to go, like, so for our church and stuff, like, there's no one gets paid. Everyone's volunteer. So we went to go clean up the church for, like, services and stuff for Sunday. So it was all prepared for everyone. And so as I was going, I had to wait for a little bit. So I put on our podcast just to kind of see how it listened, like, in a car, because I don't really listen to it after we've done editing and stuff. I put it out in the ether, and hopefully it's good enough. But I started listening to it, and then I listened to it on the way home with the boys in my car. And so I had you on the brain. And, okay, so then the dream happened.
Just never a good
thing. You and I, it was almost like at the Voices of Dentistry conference where there was, like, the rows of tables and chairs, except for it was lunchtime, and you are a pescatarian, right?
Yeah.
And for whatever reason, you were freaking out because the morning session, we were sitting in a place, and they would come by and they would scan our badges. And then apparently what happened is, depending on where we were sitting, and I don't think this is actually a real thing that actually happens, but depending where we were sitting, they ordered our lunch for us, depending on what we had, like, previously ordered, like, when we registered for this conference that never existed. And they would come and they put all of our food ready for us. When we came back from, like, our little break to eat lunch, our food would be there. But you and I, for whatever reason, were really late coming back. And so, like, okay, we'll just find somewhere to sit, not knowing that they had put our food somewhere. And then you sat down, and there was, like, a bowl of, like, salad stuff, like, look healthy crap. And you started flipping out. You're like, this isn't what I ordered. I ordered sausage. And I'm like, you did what? For lunch? And so I was like, I don't know what you're talking about. I'm like, what does it look like? Like, sausage patties or, like, sausage links? And it ended up being,
disgusting.
It ended up being... like over back to where we were. So I finally figured, I was like, okay, I'll go find it for you. And oh, there's this guy.
I'm in a crisis.
Yeah, you were freaking out. And then, like, I don't know, like, maybe it's just I'm a dude or whatever. I'm like, oh, I'm going to solve the problem. Ha, ha, ha. And so I see the guy cut up a piece, like, these little sausage links like you get from the store or whatever. And I start running, and I jump over the table and, like, knock him down and like, knock the fork Jesus. Out of his hand. And be like, don't, that's my friend, sausage. And then I woke up. And so,
that's
I don't know.
The best line. Please title this podcast, That's My Friend's Sausage.
Yeah,
what
that's
in the
not going to happen.
That is the most random dream. Exactly. So random.
I know.
Well, appreciate you getting my lunch for me.
Yeah, buddy.
Even if it's sausage.
But you know, that was
a problem solver.
Like, the first dream I've ever had about, like, dentistry outside of, like, school, like the nightmares you have in school. Like, I don't really remember thinking about dentistry and dreams of dentistry. I'm like, we're in a freaking CE conference. And I'm like, oh. Yeah.
I used to have dreams about, so do you have like a call system in your office? Like you will like ding for the doctor, say you're ready, things like that.
Mm-hmm. No.
So the last, all the offices I've ever worked in have, well, except for the last one I attempted at, have had like some kind of call system. So if it lights up, it's, you know, green, it's ready for doctor's exam. If it's yellow, the patient's here, whatever. So just so we can have we could talk and kind of tell everybody where we are in the day. I used to hear those things in my nightmares, I should say.
Oh.
Like they were just constant. Like I like the patient was here and the doctor's exams and all the, ugh, it was just terrible. And then I would always have dreams about not writing up charts properly. Like I forgot to write something up and it was like something major. Like I missed something. It was so, I think my doctor was like being such a pain in the ass at the time and creating like so much stress. And that was like the one thing that I was like, would spend a lot of time doing our, you know, working in perio, we have a lot of referral letters. So like every single patient I had not only got chart right, like notes and stuff, but they also had a letter that I sent to the general dental office. So I would just like dream that I just forgot something, like something major, like, biopsies or I don't know. I hated that. I'm so glad I don't have those dreams anymore.
Me too. But I'm glad I never had them.
Interesting. That's really freaking random. But hilarious.
Okay, I'm going to go back to this just for one. You're welcome. For 1 second. So we don't have that call system, but I'll tell you this. My doctor and I, we always came up with like a little like system because I hate interrupting them during their exams and I hate when they look up and talk to me in front of their patient. I don't know why. It just bothers the crap out of me. And so we had this new doctor that came in. Yeah. And like, well, because they would be like, I would just like peer around the corner and they'd be like, okay, Andrew, how you doing? Do you need anything? What are you ready? Are you ready for an exam? I'm like, I mean, obviously I'm there for an exam. Like you should know the schedule that you know that I need an exam. So, nicest doctor in the world. And then so I was like, doctor, I was like, buddy, you gotta like, I'm going to do one of these little nods to you and you just look up. And as long as we make eye contact, we're good to go. Like we don't need to have a conversation. And I love that so much more than any sort of call system or any sort of real conversation that we have. And then we go out of the room. We talk. Well, as soon as he gets up, I go out and I go meet him and we'll talk about the x-rays. We'll talk about what I see and what I would prefer for the, you know, outside of that room. But like, I don't know. I can't do things in front of patients like that.
No, I don't prefer to talk in front of other patients, but a lot of times in my situation, the patient was IV sedated because the doctor was in surgery or something like that. So, you know, I could go in there and not say a lot, but give kind of like, hey, still 19, not looking great. We need to have a come to Jesus when you get in there kind of thing. But I always love, because it's kind of the perpetuating area of frustration between hygienists and dentists, the hurry up to wait for the exam, right? Like they hate getting up. I hear it all the time. They hate getting up for exams. We hate waiting on them. and it would used to be, so it would be a joke, like, we had two entrances, one for doctor, one for assistant, into the room, you know? Like, we had two entrances. And I would just, like, pace back and forth and look, like, pop my head into each one every few seconds. Like, you know I'm here. You know I'm here. And then I swear to God, she would just sit there longer despite me, in spite of this. Get up right now, I swear. I'm already 10 minutes into the next patient, and they have a full mouth series.
How do you feel about doctor coming in before you're even done working and then doing the exam?
Yeah, I guess it depends. If I'm just hand scaling, not a problem. Like, sure, that's fine. And I told her this, and I think she used to do it on purpose, was when I'm prophy jetting. And more because that's patience. I mean, so like now I got to rinse them really good because they don't want to sit with all that salt in there. And then I got to do it to them again just to finish wherever I was. And then I got to remember where I was. You know, like we're such like routine creatures that I would go within my routine without even realizing where I stopped in that routine. And then I was like, shit, I think I already did this area. Like, so I think it was more like the polishing aspect, only because that was just a pain for the patient. That, you know, I'm having to rinse them really good. It's salty or gritty, and they want it all out one time. So I don't know. If it's hand scaling or even Cavitroning, that's fine. I'd rather you do it now than make me wait later.
That's kind of how I am.
Who's on our interview today? Who do we have?
We have Dr. Bilal Saeb. We got caught up with him at Voices of Dentistry.
Our buddy.
And
he's the best.
He is exactly the type of dentist that you want to work with. And I notice I said with and not for. He's so good. You did hear him on the last episode.
He is that person that you would be a co-therapist with him.
Yeah. And so he did ask a question. He's the one that had brought his hygienist to the Voices of Dentistry conference. And then we caught up with him after hours and started talking about everything and anything that he would want to talk about. And it was such a good one and it was so long, but it's all great. But it was so long, we're going to break it up into two different episodes.
And then we're going to go on his podcast soon.
We are. That'll be really great.
And I agree. I think you said it very well. He's the kind of dentist that you want to work with, not for. And I think he would always make that environment feel like that. Like you're a co-therapist and he wants to do right by the patient, and he wants to do good work, and he wants to stay current in research. Like, he's just fills a lot of little spots, little check boxes in dentistry of someone you want to work with.
He's a great doctor. We love him. So we hope you guys enjoy this interview, and we'll see you on the other side of it.
Hey, Michelle.
Yeah?
It's time for the interview.
Oh, but I had something else to say.
We need to let the experts talk now.
Fine.
Listeners, welcome to another interview segment of A Tale of Two Hygienists.
Where Michelle's been drinking, and so she gives all these little details.
Hold on, let's back up again. So we're still in Nashville.
We are.
Right.
At Voices of Dentistry.
It's pretty awesome. This is still day one, evening time now. A lot of people, let's say they probably left. They probably went out and done something like dinner or drinking or something.
Yeah.
We just had our little get together, which was fun. And then Michelle starts talking to everybody, and I get pissy because I'm like, hey, we should put this on a podcast. And then
stop talking, Michelle.
Go somewhere else.
Let's record it.
She's like, no, it's fine. She stops that conversation. Then we go and find someone else. And now we have Dr. Bilal Saeb, who is my friend because we went to Chicago together because we're really nerdy.
That's
and
right.
Went to a conference with podcasting.
Podcast movement. That's right. That was
that's what we were
really
trying
cool.
to think of earlier. Podcast movement. Man,
that was a good conference. I liked it. It was fun. But then, so I walk up from grabbing my rock star. And
oh God,
you guys are talking about like, I don't know. I just
implant,
heard something about cutting tissue or something.
All for fixed prosthetic appliances.
And I'm like, are you recording this? And he said, no. And so I said, okay, we got to do this. So that's my really crappy introduction of Dr. Saeb.
Terrible introduction.
And he's also a podcaster. I'm going to let him introduce a little more himself.
Passionate like Dennis. Really
impromptu little yes. thing. But tell us everything you do. And your, I want to talk about North Carolina, too, eventually, sometime, if we have time tonight.
And why, you don't like North Carolina? Is that how it goes?
We'll talk about it. Let's introduce yourself first.
So I'm Bilal Saeb. I'm a dentist in Chapel Hill, North Carolina, and I do a lot of implant reconstructions because I've been through two GPRs and a prosthodontics fellowship. I wouldn't say I'm a resident. I've never went
You're
through
not
a
allowed
residency.
Legally, right?
I'm to say. Legally, I'm not allowed to say I'm a prosthodontist, so I'm not a prosthodontist, yeah. but I've work like one. I think like one. I talk like one.
Which is why I was picking his brain.
And so I don't do that. So, but I restore a lot of all-on-six, all-on-four implants. And I do have a podcast, thepassionatedentist.com.
Yep.
And you got an award today too, didn't you?
Award?
Didn't you get like a little thing for
I don't know. I got a letter.
Were you in that room?
A letter?
I didn't get anything.
Maybe you weren't in that room when that happened. I thought they called your name earlier.
You got an award and you weren't in the room?
Pretty sure.
Where would it have been? I was in all the rooms.
In the main one.
I didn't get any awards.
Well, they called you
awards
name.
For what?
Being awesome, I think.
Being awesome.
Obviously, either I'm not awesome or...
Podcast was one of the first ones that I started listening
yeah,
to.
Yeah, same.
I was the third one on the market.
Yeah but so it was one of the first that, ones like, that we started listening to.
Yeah. Why did you start doing podcasting when it wasn't cool yet? Now it's freaking awesome.
I think it was cool when I started it. It was just very lonely.
Cool. Yeah. Very lonely.
I did. I contributed to the cool. That's what I just did.
Yeah. You did.
I mean, who was the cool? I mean, after me was Alan Mead and Jason Lipscomb. Yeah. Those guys are like the coolest of the cool. I mean, come on. Those guys are funny.
Look at those
And then there's you guys. You guys are funny. You guys are cool. So, I mean,
we're the hygienist.
But
we're on a different world.
I think it's a different realm. It doesn't matter. You know, what is podcasting really? What is podcasting really? It's educational entertainment is really what it is.
Yeah, I agree.
You don't really learn a lot as much as... You get little pearls here and there, and you just take it, and then you say, okay, I want to learn more about this. And you kind of further it on your time. But that's what podcasting is really about, especially when it's dentistry. I mean, come on.
Right.
We're very visual people. I mean,
right.
Can you see anything right now? No.
Exactly.
I
don't even have my glasses on. I can't see Jack. Okay, so... but since then, I mean, look at this. I was the third on the market. Now there's
look at it.
Like 37 of them or something.
I think
can't
it's
even
in the 40s now.
It might be. I can't even keep up anymore.
You can't keep up because it's growing so fast.
And then there was that post in Facebook that said there's another one coming up after the
millennial one. Yeah. Right?
Yeah. Who's the millennial one?
There's a millennial one coming out.
Dentist or millennials or something. Yeah. There's another one coming out.
Okay, who's our last speaker right here? What's his name? He was talking to all these members.
Oh, Jason from the Prism Podcast?
No. You were right here, and then you left. He was talking for a while. What's his name? Right after they had their
The Brain Trust.
The Brain Trust.
I left before the Brain. Oh, that okay. person came on.
I can't remember that dude.
Sorry. I left the Brain Trust.
It's okay.
We'll talk about that on the intro part of this. That really upsets me still.
What, the Brain Trust?
No, that we left. Yeah.
I was getting nothing from the Brain Trust because I'm not a startup and I don't care about
it. Okay, I guess we're going to talk about it now. Okay, so this is the thing. This type of meeting is not really Michelle's type of meeting.
Oh.
Because this is more like...
Business.
This is kind of businessy, like the dentist side of things, where it's not the prevention side. It's not the whatever
side. It's
not
the science side of it. It's not the research. I really love the science side.
You're such a dork.
So... It's not exactly my type of meeting either.
Hello, my friend.
The truth of the
Say
matter
more things.
Is okay. I'll tell you. It's not because I actually like science as much as
the clinician
It's a very heavy business oriented meeting, and there's a lot of infomercial-ish kind of meetings here. A lot of people tell you a lot of stuff that's happening, but you don't learn anything. The only way you can learn more. Is... And I've learned over the years to really, really, really avoid infomercial CE courses. And I just
get
catch
to the meat and potatoes and decide if that's what is right for you.
When I'm doing my podcast, when I'm lecturing, I'm really, really trying to teach people a thing or two. Mm-hmm. I want people to learn something. I want people to take it to their Monday morning to their practice. I want them to do that. Yeah, occasionally some of my podcast episodes are not quite perfect, but then again, I'm busy. You know, I can't control everybody that I interview. But what type
of CE do you seek out then?
Things that I can take to my practice on Mondays. I mean, it's about as classic as it gets. I'm an old-fashioned guy.
Like technique driven, like this is a better way to prep, or this is how you use composites better, or this is how you know.
Material science is one thing. Yeah. Material science is one thing, but technique is another. But at this point in my life, in my practice, I'm really concentrating on patient relations and how to talk to them, how to communicate with them, how to understand them, how to influence them, how to sell cases without selling them, and that's really what I'm trying to do. Because to be honest, I mean, I can tell there's 150 different composite companies out there.
Sure.
Everybody's got their favorite composite. Right. You know, I use Herculite. No, not Herculite. I use 3M Universal, whatever. I've been using the same composite for the last 10 years, and it works beautifully in my hands, and it looks beautiful in the patient's mouth.
Sure.
I'm not saying other composites don't work, but I don't sit there and talk about this stuff because
you found it and it works.
It works, and it works beautifully. And my patients are happy, and I'm happy. So why am I going to sit here and talk materials? And if I start talking materials, it's going to be like sales and... I'm not trying to sell anything. I really want just other dentists to do
this. I want to sell your podcast. Well, not like sell. I want
my podcast.
I want our listeners to start listening to your podcast, though.
All right. Well, if they're hygienists, they want to learn something. That's fine.
I think they'll get a lot out of it.
Yeah.
But I'm trying to look at the whole life of a dentist and the whole practice. That's what I'm trying to do.
Yeah.
But I think we need to go talk about implants because you had some good questions, and that's what prompted this impromptu recording.
So, and then at this point, I'm going to start shutting myself off because I don't care as much about that. Just kidding, Michelle. I'm just kidding.
You don't care about implants?
Don't hurt my heart like that, Andrew. No, I'm not.
No. This is where I actually be quiet and listen and learn, and not really contribute much to the conversation because I don't know as much.
Okay.
The reason that Andrew was like, shut up, stop speaking, wait to the podcast, because I was asking, because you're not a prosthetic dentist.
I'm not a prosthodontist.
But
I work just like one.
I have a tendency towards being a prosthodontist.
Yes.
And my question to you was fixed non-removable appliances and how they're fabricated and cleansability of that. Because as a hygienist, we have to help those patients maintain it.
Sure.
And we started talking about surgeons and if they plastic enough bone. But let's kind of like take it back down to these patients that are getting these All-on-4 or Pro-Arch or fixed non-removable appliances. What is the ideal fabrication process for those appliances?
Ideal? That, as my CPA would say, Bilal, that depends. Okay, that is just the ideal practice, it needs to be cleansable at home.
Right.
It needs to feel solid. It needs to fit their smile and their face.
Okay.
I mean, I follow Frank Spear's facially generated techniques. Yes. I follow all that very, very to the core. I want the face to look good. I want the teeth to fit the face, the bite to be comfortable according to the joints. I follow all those rules, but it's not, so it has to follow all those things, but hey, just take a picture. There you go. Which is like a selfie here. So, but from your perspective, it has to be cleansable.
Right. For the patient at home.
For the patient at home. But, you know, you and I were saying this, Michelle, that the problem is a lot of these patients have lost all their teeth because they sucked at taking care of their teeth.
Yes.
And they don't brush their teeth and stuff like that. And actually worse, they're heavy bruxers.
Right.
And those are the ones that worry me more than hygiene.
Absolutely.
So
previous perio. Because
previous perio. But you know what?
Science.
Hold on. Mm. Periodontal disease is not the same as peri-implantitis. And you can argue with me on that one.
I would love to argue about this. Because I agree that they are not the same disease.
Right.
But I think the pathogen response from the host might be the same.
It might be. But it's just what I've seen is I've seen many, many, many patients, and I've been restoring these things for over 10 years now, mm-hmm. who have horrible oral hygiene. I mean, I have patients that I have this one patient that I see him every 4 years. I don't think he ever brushes his teeth. And we literally have to remove the entire prosthesis, take it outside, you know, get a construction worker with a jackhammer to remove all that.
Yeah, it's disgusting. It smells awful.
But you know what? We take radiographs of his implants. And it's no bone loss. None. But he lost his teeth to this stuff. Same stuff. And I mean, okay, yeah, granted, that's just one example of many.
It's exception to the rule a lot of times.
And we have seen many patients who lose implants regardless of how good they clean it. And so
Which is kind of something to say about implants. Like how we don't really know what is happening. Like we can all like sit here and have these very intense conversations about whose school of thought is the better way of doing it. But at the end of the day, I mean, this is totally digressing, but sure. I think why can't we help keep natural teeth?
I love keeping natural teeth.
I would love to keep natural teeth. Like, why is that not...
No. I'm one of the dentists. I mean, I love keeping natural teeth.
Can we have those conversations? Like, I love these implant-heavy-driven conversations because they are a part of everyday dentistry now, and you can't help but get around them because people are placing them. I mean,
Would you like me to tell you why everybody's talking about implants
now? Because everyone's freaking placing them, and they're the money makers.
Yes. Okay, so... I'll tell you why. Let me step down a little bit. It's because insurance companies don't pay for it, and it's a fee for service. So, and to be honest, technically speaking, it does have a higher success rate than a lot of other things that we do in dentistry. And so, you know, you can't get 97-98% of endo. Success rate of endo.
But even we're saying 97% success rate, but I don't know if that's necessarily the case for implants.
No,
you
that's what I'm saying.
You might have 97% survival rate.
So are you arguing semantics about survival versus success?
Yeah.
So define survival and define success.
Survival is pretty much just being in your mouth. Success is aesthetically driven. Patient is happy. It has no radiographic bone loss. It has no bleeding upon probing. There's so many levels of success with an implant. Survival for an implant is literally it just has to be in the mouth. It's there.
Okay.
So the research studies that I read for implants are that it's like 97% survival rate.
Okay.
And success, and I think success a lot of times is more in the university setting too. So it's not in your private practices.
That's true, yeah.
And so where do you find the best practices for implant care and implant placement when we're really kind of looking at research that is done in university settings where their criteria for placing it is a little stricter, so they're not having, people with health histories that are ridiculous. We're placing them. We're not placing them outside of buccal bone, and we're having like scans and all of that done. And then you have the hygiene side of it. You have the prosthodontists that are educated well and are trying to publish, and so they're trying to do their best work. And those are the ones that are going into the evidence-based research. That for me as a clinician and / stuffy evidence-based person that Andrew likes to call
boring.
I want to talk about the people that I'm seeing in everyday dentistry, which is not those standards.
So what are you seeing?
So now, granted, I'm not in private practice anymore, but when I was seeing patients, it was and going and talking to my friends that are in there, it's ridge overlap, not just modified ridge, like. Right. True ridge overlapped cases where there's not a person that can clean that looking in their mouth as a hygienist, as a skilled professional, or the person working in their own mouth. Like, you just can't clean that. Mm. And that has, I have seen that come back a little bit.
I could probably do it, I think. Just like give me a, I don't know what ridge overlap is.
Give me a sharp
instrument.
Give me a burr and a piece of floss, and I could find an area for that.
Okay, can you, I'm sorry.
Insert.
to help me know that, Janice, what's ridge overlap?
So, wait, actually, it's, I'm going okay, so to leave that to the
let me see if I can explain it to you this way.
Speak slowly and use simple words.
All right. So if you look at a saddle on a horse, wraps okay. around the horse, not all the way around, but the saddle part where the rider sits,
yeah,
it's not just right there on the spine of the horse. Right. It goes down about, you know, 12 inches on one way and 12 inches another. Okay, so if the horse's back is the ridge, it laps over on one side and laps over the other. So if that's the prosthesis, food gets in there, and there's no way it's going to come out. That's what it is. That's the.
How do you maintain that?
And true. So the modified ridge would be if the prosthesis goes all the way up and attaches just to the spine and wraps a little bit on one side. So you can get to it from one side, but not from the other side.
Okay. And that's more cleansable, but still not ideal.
It's more cleansable, but it's not ideal. That's called a modified ridge lap. And then there's the, what is it?
There's all in between also, there.
But you can come straight to the spine, just touch the spine, but not put any pressure on it. It can be cleansable on both sides.
Like, I call it like the egg.
Yeah, the egg shape or something like that.
It's like
yes.
a little egg, and it kisses the top of
okay.
the ridge.
It just pushes on the tissues a little bit. Or you can have a high water design, meaning it sits above the gum line, basically. Meaning you can pass your finger, or you can push your tongue from underneath right. from one side to the other.
Well, it's very cleansable.
In some people,
but for speech and
well the problem
right?
with
yeah, and
well if the patient has a high lip line, if it's in the upper and they have a high lip line and they smile, you can see that big space there, and it's really really ugly. You can't have that. Right. If they have a low lip line and they go up there, you can't see it. That's more tolerable. But the problem with that is it affects speech.
Air.
Because when I say the letter B, for example,
it's
going to make the upper lip puff out.
It's all the air that
gets trapped. Yeah, it gets trapped
up
underneath it. You don't have that on the, you don't have that on
the
bottom.
The yeah.
And so even sometimes when I do a modified ridge, they'll still get that. And I have to take the prosthesis off, add a little bit of resin here and there, and try to close it up. And yeah, is it best for hygiene? No, it's not. But the patient's complaining, and I have to make the patient happy because they just spent $25,000 with me, and I have to keep them happy.
Sure.
So it's a really tough spot. It's
yes,
a
it is.
Really tough spot. And
yes.
implants are... I come from going from ortho to hygiene, whereas as soon as I went into hygiene, I was surgical assisting an implant and bone regeneration, block grafts, and... So I'm very surgery heavy, and I love implants. However, when I would go back into the hygiene side of things, I hate implants. Mm. Like, it's not a natural tooth, and it's not a very cleansable environment. And I almost wanted to say to my dentist, like, why couldn't we save this tooth? And now we have biologics, and we have regeneration.
Yeah, but, you know, when there's something that bad with the tooth, so as a restorative dentist, okay, if the tooth has been... root canal, post, and a crown, you know, to redo all that is just...
That's a lot.
It's a lot, and a lot of times the cost is worse, and a lot of times if you've done so much work on it, there's something else going on in there, and the success rate is much lower than an implant. And so there are exceptions, but when you see a patient, like, I mean, I'd be glad to send you some of my radiographs on some of these patients. I mean... As much as I love saving teeth, I'll just look at a patient, and you know how I like talking
like
to patients.
Like it's time to call it a day.
I'll just look at them and say, hey, you know what? Unfortunately, your teeth are not in great shape, but all the bone around it is great. I think we can really reconstruct your mouth and give you a nice set of teeth again because it's unsavable. So by the time they get to me, that's where they are. The only thing I can do is make them feel good about the fact that they came to me, and I'm going to help them as best as I can. That's all I can do.
So at that point... Is this a time where you could have a conversation with your hygienist or ask the hygienist, like, what is their history of home care? Are they going to care for this? Are they going to do the things that we ask them to do? What's their past history look like?
We don't know. Some of these patients have never put a toothbrush to their mouths.
So are they the best candidates for?
And so what I'll do with a lot of times with these patients is I will... I'll bring them back for photographs, models, and all that stuff, and just the full patient workup. We'll take initial impressions, and we'll make them a bite and come back, and we send them away for a denture. when they come back and they're in their healing phase, mm-hmm. either they've had either wearing a denture or just over the implants right now, just in the healing stage, or the surgeon has connected them to the implants mm-hmm. if they have to pay more to get that. But if they're doing all that, that's when we really start working on the case in oral hygiene. And, you know, we see them 3 to 4 days after surgery, 2 to 3 weeks after surgery, 4 to 5 weeks after surgery, and about 3 months after surgery. And along the way, we're talking to them about hygiene, saying, wait a second, you need to clean this better. And, I mean, what else can we do?
So,
you know, I mean, you tell me. I mean, I don't have any magical solutions.
I think this is a wonderful conversation to have, actually, because...
I mean, I can tell them, no, you know, we're not going to put implants in your mouth until you brush your teeth, but their teeth all rotted out. I mean, some of these patients, they're edentulous for a reason.
They're going to be edentulous for a reason.
Yes, they're going to be edentulous regardless.
And so if you say, all right, so we're going to take out all your teeth, and I want you in your presentation today have this rock hard surface or this chewing surface or something that's spongy. What are you going to be accountable for how to maintain this? Like, why did we lose your teeth?
Well, I mean, we talked to them about it, saying, listen, you have a very interesting opportunity to get solid teeth again.
What about start over?
Like, and that's what I tell them. And we tell them this all the time. And my hygienist does all this stuff nowadays. They're saying, you know what? You were very lucky. Not everybody can. Welcome to our hygiene podcast.
Yeah.
but Lindsay, I mean, I think she went out with her husband. No, she's actually, she's here with her husband. They went out to dinner. They're like, do you want to come join us? I was like, no, you guys go have a date.
Go have a fun night.
Yeah, three kids. Yeah. You know, I tell you, you guys go enjoy yourselves right now.
Three kids, yeah, good Lord. I think they're very busy. Have fun.
So anyway, but that's her job is to say, you know, you're very lucky that one, you have enough bone and place where you can, you know, and the opportunity to get these kind of restorations. Mm-hmm. Two, you can afford it. The fact that you have already this fixed restorations in here, great. Now, how much have you spent on this money on these teeth? And actually, a lot of times I'll say this: how much did you spend on these things, teeth? Yeah, it's like a car. I said, yeah, you take care of your car probably better than you take care of your teeth.
You get oil changes.
Can you please?
You don't change the engine; you change the oil. Yeah. So let's talk about how you do that with your mouth.
Right, and I'll just tell them, like, I'm not asking for miracles. I'm just asking for two brushes and one floss a day, one water pick a day. I am not asking for miracles here.
What everything an alternating regimen of that.
What do you
every
mean?
Like Monday, Wednesday, Friday, you water pick. Tuesday, Thursday.
No, I want to water pick every day, and twice a week. No, I want to water pick every day. I don't want any food stuck up.
Now, is that because you're accounting for patient not being compliant?
No, I'll tell you exactly why right now. Mm-hmm. Because if food gets stuck up there, and it puts pressure on the tissues.
Oh, it's awful.
And it's going to open up a space, and they're going to come back to me saying, hey, air is escaping from over here. They want me to take it off, add more resin, and we start going down the spiral.
So if you have the patient that's going to do this every day, wonderful, fantastic.
Yeah.
So my issue is not ever food. I'm not also coming from the prosthetic side of it.
Right.
I'm coming from the maintenance side of it. Mine is biofilm.
Hmm. Well, biofilm, if it forms on the teeth that are resin, what are you worried about exactly?
Is it is it the teeth or is it the implant you're talking about? Where's the biofilm?
Where's the
forming everywhere, right?
I know, but what is it going to do to dentured teeth or zirconia? What's it going to do to that?
Creates an odor, creates a taste that is not wonderful for the patient.
Okay.
It will then, of course, colonate and move towards the implants that are now going to be harder to maintain and harder for me as a hygienist to actually clean because if we're not taking that off
every time,
how do I help maintain that? So I can't scale it. I can't freaking reach it, right? Because if it's...
Well, you only scale the areas where you can get to.
Right. So if I can't go subgingival, because if my instruments will go, let's say it is a convex or convex-ish type of appliance where I have maybe 2 millimeters of a very horizontal kind of restoration till I meet the implant. that make sense?
Well, okay. Now, ideally, the implants...
It's going to come up and kiss it, right?
Yeah, but, no, the implants, you should be able to, not necessarily see it, but you should be able to get to it pretty easily, either from the facial or from the lingual. You should be able to get to it.
So there's going to be a surface that I'm not going to be able to clean with
my
scaler.
Yeah, the mesial or the visceral. It's always like that, yes.
Or the facial or the lingual.
Sure.
So, say, let's say palatal, it has more of the... The acrylic or whatever material that you're using.
Or zirconia or whatever it is.
Whatever you're using. On the facial or the lingual, how do I maintain that? So it's not even my job every 3 months or whatever time they have. It's going to be a daily, every other day, 3 days, 4 days regimen at home, right? For biofilm removal.
So... As a restorative dentist, I'm not necessarily worried as much about biofilm as I am about calculus. So let me explain to you why. Because for the last this is relatively new. Okay, I'm not saying I don't like biofilm. I don't care about. I'm not saying I don't care. It's because I tell my patients to put a teaspoon. A tablespoon of bleach.
I'm down with the bleach.
I tell them to put a tablespoon of bleach into their water pick.
Right.
Twice a week. Mm. I tell them, don't drink it. It's going to taste bad, but go ahead and use
it. But it's pool water. And we drink pool water.
But I just tell them to do that. And this was, by the way, this was recommended by some periodontists.
It's been around there for a long time. It's been out there a long, long time.
So put a tablespoon of bleach into the bath of that. Wherever.
I would say it's the bleach that's non-concentrated, because now bleach is coming concentrated. So you have your like...
Yeah, you use the... But you have to use the blue cap. You have to use a blue cap.
Specific about your bleach and your solution mixture. And I think it's got like...
Concentrated means it's double. That's all it is. The blue cap one is double concentrated.
And it can't be like scented or anything
like
that.
Yeah, that's why I said it. The blue cap.
Yeah, but I feel like you have to be very specific with patients.
No. I tell my patients, saying, don't go out and get the lemon fresh Clorox, whatever. I said, no, just get the blue one.
There is a specific solution that you have to mix that is supposed to, that's recommended, I guess.
Yeah, that's why
by
I said, fill it up to the top, put one tablespoon, stir it up a little bit, you're fine. I just use that twice a week.
Kill everything.
It's supposed to kill everything. I tell them don't drink it, and I hope they don't die like Sumi or something. But it's never happened.
Well, they die, they won't sue you. Family might, but they won't. They'll be dead. Don't worry about that.
You know, their water pick might die because of all the bleach through it. But
I tell them only do it twice a week. You know, usually I tell them on a Wednesday, on a Sunday, just do it like that, and I think you'd be fine. Is what I say. And you know, in the beginning, honestly, 10 years ago when I used to do these restorations, every time they came over, I used to drill out all the seals, remove all the Teflon plug, unscrew all the restorations.
It was a protocol to do it every 6 months or a year.
But most of the patients, the tissues would look beautiful.
See, this is the opposite of what I see.
Yeah, but most of the time. Occasionally, the problem is... one in 10 would look really crappy in there.
Yes.
And we just tell them, saying...
That this is also the lab side of it, because it used to be fabricated with acrylic, which holds candidiasis and a lot of other things that... Which Clorox would kill
them pretty much.
All of these things. This would not be a problem. So, I did Robert Faulkner's study club.
Okay.
And
I have no idea who that is, but that's fine.
So, he and Dr. Shaw did the textbook Peri-implantitis.
Okay. I should know these names, right? I'll pretend I know them.
Yeah.
I know all about these guys.
Can't believe you don't know. I know who
they are. I've attended all their courses and everything they ever taught. Yeah.
No idea.
Well,
but remind me what they said.
Says a prosthodontist.
Because I've had
not
a couple
the prosthodontist.
He's not a prosthodontist though. So if he's a prosthodontist, he would have known these things.
Like across the nation, there's all these study clubs, and there's little niche, little markets that you can climb into and go down that rabbit hole or whatever it is. But they have a textbook, and it talks about the material that you're using and the fabrication, which a fabrication of these fixed non-removable appliances, that's kind of a big deal, because they have...
Kind of, considering my practice is almost dedicated to it right now.
Kind of a big deal.
Yeah.
So cleansability is a huge factor of it, but they're kind of also new.
Yeah, they are.
They're like the shiny new toy in our little toy box, yeah. And not everyone knows how to maintain that for long-term success. So we talked, well, the dental guys today talked about occlusion and how that's not really important.
Well, no, they're talking about single implant crowns and stuff like that. I mean, it's because I specifically attended that course just to see what the heck they're talking about. Occlusion is not important. I mean, what the F? Excuse my French.
Right. You did not even go for the gold on that one.
I say F all the time.
It's okay. It's okay. So.
So, okay. So you have the occlusion. Like, but we don't have a long-term studies on fixed non-removable appliances and their success. So you can postulate on a lot of things of its home care, its occlusion, its fabrication, but we really kind of don't know. So we can all just sit here and debate about it. But honestly, at the end of the day, it's going to be case-by-case basis.
Yeah.
And for me, coming in, Andrew, and I throw him in here, even though he doesn't work with us. Mm-hmm. For us, it's cleansability. Not just because of success of the implant, but complaints from the patient. Because an unhappy patient with a shitty odor in their mouth that they can't get rid of because of biofilm underneath there that they can't clean, or a taste that they can't manage because it just tastes disgusting. Like, those are the little things that, from the hygiene sector that we deal with, and we can't do anything about because the surgeries already happen. And this is where the trickle-down effect occurs from a hygiene standpoint, is that the surgeon didn't plasty enough bone, so the restorative dentist had to do more of a modified ridge lap. Now, hygiene has to maintain this.
And they can't.
And you guys can't.
Yeah.
And so it's like...
Listeners, I want to tell you a story. A story I found on the web, which makes this Scaling the Web with Andrew.
Okay, so this week on Scaling the Web with Andrew, this one I found, I think it was on RDH eVillage or something where it had come across, because it's from Dentistry IQ, and the title was, What Does BOP Really Mean? And the reason why I want to talk about this for our listeners is sometimes I feel like we don't take BOP seriously enough, and that just because there's a little bit of BOP here and there, that's kind of okay, I guess. So anyways, this is an article.
This is interesting, because did you see Dental Hacks stuff this week about bleeding on probing and zero bloody prophies?
No, I haven't been reading it.
Oh, you should go back on that one. Continue on, sorry. But I think that's interesting that this is coming up about after I just read like 100 comments on one of these threads.
Maybe let me read this first, and then you tell me what those threads were saying. Kind of briefly.
Okay.
So this one was from January 3rd of this year, 2017. By Richard H. Nagelberg, DDS. And it's a really short article. It's only like three paragraphs. It says, bleeding on probing, BOP, is encountered every day in virtually every dental practice. It is so common that there may be a tendency to undervalue its importance in diagnosing gingivitis and periodontitis. BOP is like periodontitis or pregnancy in the following respects. There is no such thing as just a little bleeding. You have it or you don't. There's no such thing as a little periodontitis. You have it or you don't. There's no such thing as a little pregnant. You are or you are not. You could have BOP or periodontitis of limited distribution in only a few sites, but you still have it. Why do the gums bleed upon probing? Because the gingival epithelium lining, the sulcus, is ulcerated, exposing the capillary beds and the underlying connective tissue. The probe nicks the capillaries when it contacts ulcerated epithelium, which is denuded, meaning it is gone. An intact gingival epithelium acts as a bacterial and toxin barrier to the systemic circulation. Is BOP more important, perhaps, when we realize, as it relates to periodontal disease and systemic health? You bet. It constitutes a diagnosis of gingivitis, which is the right time to intervene before full-blown periodontal disease develops. More on this next time.
Interesting. I like it, though. It was a very kind of contentious comment feed on Dental Hacks. And I think it always is, though. When you start talking about bleeding and inflammation and when is perio actually starting, and you get a lot of schools of thought on that one.
So
and
it gets very
frustrating to
this
read.
Is Dental Hacks Nation group, Facebook group, right? That's what you're talking about?
Yeah.
So listeners, if you guys want to be a part of this, there's only a few hygienists that are in there, and we could really use some extra help in helping these dentists. I think there's 2,000 or so members and just a handful of hygienists.
Yeah. And it was actually a thread that Carrie Ibbotson started, and a lot of dentists weighed in, and it was a lot of good discussion. I mean, quite honestly, good things, but pretty much they were saying, like, the reality is that, let me see if I can pull it up. The reality is that you're not going to ever have zero bloody prophies. It's just not going to happen, which everyone's pushback on that was, why wouldn't you strive for it, though? Why are you just making the assumption that's not going to happen? And I guess that's always my question, too. Like, why are you just going to assume that patients aren't going to do it? Why don't you help them understand what is actually health and what that looks like so they strive for it? If they choose not to, that's their own thing. But don't set them up for, oh, I'm going to have some bleeding. I bleed all the time. You poked me with that, so of course I'm going to bleed. Whole thing. Let me see if I can find this. Because there were some very interesting perspectives in here. I didn't agree necessarily, but they were kind of like, okay, I see where you're coming from, but...
Well, while you're looking that up, I actually have it up, and I'll read a couple of the... There are like the main responses and there's sub-responses underneath it, and one of them says, zero bloody prophies is the dumbest thing I've heard this year. Another one said, I prefer to live in the real world where a little blood is not a big deal. And then Carrie said, so if I'm hearing you, you think bleeding is okay, ... and healthy, ? And people are like, it depends on the person. So, I don't know. It's
really interesting. Yeah. And a lot of them are talking about, like, what is periodontal disease? Presence of certain amounts of attachment bone loss or presence of certain bacteria. Prevalence and percentage are determined by what we consider a disease state. And I guess I think we subscribe to an old model of disease and repair. And I think we're starting to see a new way of treating patients, which is, let's find out what maybe they, because somebody, I mean, if they don't have the pathogens to destroy bone, if you checked solid, did the oral DNA, and honestly, I say this without having 100% knowledge in the oral DNA side of it, but okay, let's say they got a little bleeding, but they don't have the pathogens to destroy bone. Do you still not have that conversation with them because inflammation can lead to so many other systemic concerns? So, you know, does that make sense?
Yeah, I'm totally hearing you.
Well, okay. Moving on from this. I feel like it's going to create another argument.
Well, no, I mean, we could talk about this for days and days and days, and we don't have that much time on this little podcast.
We could if we got some sponsors and we could make this our job. We could do that.
Okay.
All right. Well, good one. Good one for scaling the web.
It's about that time. Grab your blanket and a glass of wine. It's story time with Michelle.
Storytime with Michelle is brought to you by Wine Awesomeness. Wine Awesomeness provides a unique way to explore and enjoy wine through customizable subscription options with an emphasis on wine discovery. Each delicious monthly shipment is an editorialized adventure through a theme, trend, educational concept, or part of the wine world. Whether it's a deep dive into overlooked Eastern European wines, a selection of bottles perfect for your backyard barbecues, or a month devoted to showcasing the work of women winemakers, they've got you. Don't forget to use the coupon code TALE, that's T-A-L-E, to receive 10% off your order, or just go to our Facebook page and click the sign up button. So for today on a story time with Michelle, we were talking about this when I was in Sweden with my German counterparts, and they were saying they're having some issues with the newer dentists coming through that are not understanding what it's like to have disease in their mouth, so they can't connect with their patients, which I thought was really interesting. Yeah. So essentially that they don't know what bleeding looks like in their own mouth, so they can't give good oral hygiene instructions or have that discussion about oral health because they don't really know what it feels like to be in that patient's shoes. Isn't that crazy? It's a little different, right? I mean, and they were asking us, like, what would you say? I was like, well, I don't know what it's like to have a baby, but I could still have a conversation with a pregnant woman about nutrition and prenatal vitamins and stuff. So why do you have to experience it yourself to be able to teach somebody? That's the dumbest thing I've ever heard. This article comes from the Danish Journal of Dentistry and Oral Hygiene. I don't know where that is or what that's from, but the title is Knowledge and Attitude of Dental Students Towards Their Oral Health Care in Kingdom of Saudi Arabia, a comparison between preclinical and clinical students. And it comes from January 2017, so a very recent article. So the introduction, the prevention of oral disease is the most accepted and efficient method for ensuring oral health. Oral health is now recognized to be equally important in relation to general health. It is widely believed that better oral health leads to lesser general health problems. The behavior of the oral health providers and their attitudes towards their own oral health reflect not only their understanding of the importance of preventative dental procedures, but also helps improving oral health of their patients. Since male and females have different psychological and psychological behaviors, that's weird. I think this was translated. All right. Anyway, it is possible their oral health behavior might be different as well. Females have been reported to be much more concerned about their dental health as compared to males. Dental students are believed to be the role model among their families and friends, and their better oral health is directly related to the community with an improved oral health status. It is important to know the level of knowledge among dental students in order to assess the need to take further actions in regarding to the increasing of preventative programs. Senior dental students are expected to have a better knowledge about the preventive oral disease. Another study was conducted in India to assess the oral health-related knowledge of beliefs of dental students. The results indicated that the students' behavior linked with the prevention of their oral diseases was lacking, therefore needs an improvement. Comparison among dental students belonging to different cultural backgrounds can be beneficial as well. Similar studies done to compare the oral health-related knowledge among dental students in Japan, Hong Kong, and West China, which revealed that there was marked difference in the attitudes of same-level students differentiated only on the basis of culture. Various studies have been done on dental students regarding the attitude towards their own oral health in many countries, but there hasn't been a study which would target more than one city in the same country. So, going through, they did a lot of closed-ended questionnaires to determine the attitude of dental students. There was a total of 794 dental students from different cities that participated in this online study, and the results were analyzed by the SPSS software. So here's the discussion. Dental students are expected to take more care of their oral health as compared to non-dental communities. We decided to conduct a research focusing on preclinical as well as clinical dental students from various dental schools throughout the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia. Previously, a number of studies have taken place comparing the attitudes and awareness of clinical and preclinical dental students in different countries. We talked about those earlier. The aim of this research was to know about the attitude of the dental students about various preventative oral health issues, then comparing between preclinical and clinical students. In the previous studies, some researchers did the comparison in a few countries, but no one did it in Saudi Arabia. We used online as well as paper-based questionnaires to assess and compare the knowledge and attitude. And they put all their questions, which were really interesting. So what was their... Oh, my computer. So things like gum bleeding after brushing, duration of toothbrushing, bad breath, dental visits, and like gum bleeding after brushing. Preclinical 64% ignored gum bleeding, and clinical 22% ignored gum bleeding. For duration of toothbrushing, preclinical 43% preferred prolonged brushing, clinical 31% preferred prolonged brushing. So that went down, which is interesting. Bad breath, 62% were worried about bad breath in preclinical, and 76% were worried about it in clinical. Dental visits, 67% ignored routine dental visits and preclinical. So that's really fun, because if we don't even go to the dentist, how can we expect our patients? And then 42% exactly. ignored dental visits and clinical. And then calculus presence, 52% worried about calculus in their oral cavity in preclinical, and 71% worried about calculus in their oral cavity in clinical. Interesting, right? Let me go back down to the rest of this discussion. It is believed that every person should visit the dentist semi-annually. Results show, which there's no science to back that up, but okay. Results showed that majority of the dental students ignored their oral health by skipping routine dental visits unless they had a problem for which they had to visit the dentist at any cost. When inquired about their concern regarding bad breath, presence of calculus, prolonged brushing, the majority of the respondents agreed that they were worried about the above mentioned dental issues. On the other hand, there is a concern that 20 to 30% of dental students tend to ignore these serious dental issues. We are hopeful that once this research is published and read by the stakeholders of dental schools, the above mentioned statistics may step towards improvement. Our focus was mainly directed towards the comparison between clinical and preclinical students regarding their attitude towards oral health. Before collecting the data, we expected the clinical dental students to have more knowledge and a better attitude towards their oral health as compared to preclinical students. The above mentioned results clearly support our hypothesis and emphasize on the need of improving the level of knowledge of preclinical students. And the conclusion is that clinical students exhibited higher concern about their oral health. There it is.
Love it.
I could say the same for hygiene students, though.
I agree. Yeah, yeah.
I think very much the same. But that's interesting, because you can't expect our patients to do it if we're not going to do it, mm-hmm. right?
That's very true.
Okay. Well, you have so much to say.
I just feel like I want to be very agreeable with you right now.
Well, why?
You know what?
Because I'm going to argue with you? Did I scare you after the last meeting?
Buddy, no. You don't scare me. I'm not scared in the least.
I don't know why you're placating me right now. But
it was a very good article.
I'll take it.
You did a great job in finding that one.
All right, well, it's great talking with you tonight, Andrew.
Mm-hmm. You too, buddy.
Oh, God. All right, so is that all for our podcast, episode 61?
No, but it was really, really good.
Okay. I don't know what your problem is right now. But
I think you're just waking up.
I think we should end our podcast.
Yeah. All right, listeners, we love you so much. Thanks for listening. Bye.
Yep. See you next week. Bye, y'all.
Absolutely love it. I wish I could do that.
I drink the whole time. You need that a co-host. Podcast.
Well, no, I like your podcast the way it is, but you do.
You know, yeah. You know the yeah. I mean, my podcast. It's like I look at all these guys and they're running all these big productions. I'm trying to make it simpler and smaller.
Yeah, yeah.
Like right now.
But
like,
that's fitting an area that there are people that want that. They don't want bigger true. And bigger.
Yeah, I mean, it's so.
Well, I think, I mean, just like everything in dentistry, like, there are always going to be enough people in whatever space. You know, they want smaller, right. simpler.
Right.
They want bigger and grander. They want right. those really nice, super elaborate offices.
Right.
or they want just like the home down, like the hometown feel exactly. to an office. Everything's a little bit different.
Yeah. What are you drinking there?
Like a lemonade, like a Rockstar lemonade thing.
God almighty.
Rockstar lemonade.
Yeah, it's delicious. I couldn't deal with all the bubbles, so I'm like,
I'm going to spike your drink one of these days. You understand that,
that's
right?
What everyone
I'm
going
to show up, and I'm just going to spike it. I'm going to put some Everclear in there. You can't taste it. It's perfect.
What if you got ice?
That would probably be the one that would get me.
Do you know what that means? Get iced?
Iced?
Iced. So, like, I'll fill you in. I feel like this is one of those things, like, what is it? Like Zimas? I think it was Zimas.
Non-alcoholic beer?
No. No, Zimas are not.
Zimas non-alcoholic, I thought.
No, they are so non-alcoholic. Zimas are like the old like malt liquor kind of like
Zima?
Zima. Z-I-M-A.
I've never heard of this.
Get the Google machine out.
That's why.
Get the Google machine out. So Zimas, and you put them somewhere we'll find them. So like we
wrong all the time. You're gonna get me wrong.
Google it.
I'm gonna.
Google it, bitch. What's that movie from?
I don't know.
That is a movie. That is 100% a movie. So,
Zima.
So are Zima. We allowed to curse in this in this recording?
Yeah, because Andrew literally had to change it.
So you have to understand that. See, Michelle, you know this, that I am a triathlete.
You are.
And in triathlons, you curse
not
like
just a triathlete, but an Ironman.
Yeah, and so we curse like sailor. Oh, are you kidding me?
I just thought it was the people I hung out with.
No, absolutely not. Because the problem with triathlons, it tears you down to your absolute core. It tears you down to your core. You get nothing left. The best way to bring out people's deep emotions is to get them physically horribly tired. And that's what we do all the time.
It's my problem. I'm
and
always so, horribly tired.
And well, I get there.
Grumpy all the time.
Yeah.
So Zima Clear Malt was a clear, lightly carbonated alcoholic beverage that was made and distributed by the Coors Brewing Company.
Yep.
Introduced in 1993, it was marketed as an alternative to beer. An early example of what is now referred to
as what high schoolers
cooler.
Like to you to drink.
Freaking high schoolers. Okay, let's start this podcast.
But I'm just going to say, if you got iced,
it
would be like, I taped somehow a Zima underneath there, and I was like, Andrew, could you look underneath this? And you found it, you would have to chug it right then and there. Like, this is the dumbest thing I've ever created.
But I just wouldn't do that.
It was just because I wanted to mess with you. Like, so I've had people.
It was a drinking game of sorts.
It was a drinking game of sorts. So people have literally, like, opened the lid of a toilet seat, and there was a Zima tape to it.
So you have to drink it now.
Yes.
You've
opened your car door and attached to, like, the handle was a
Zima. Well, that's not good because you're about to drive.
Exactly. Welcome to the South.